Good afternoon. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM.
Good afternoon. My name is Esther Ann, one of your co-hosts. And today our topic on Dawnland Signals is Return to the Teachings. We arrived at this topic after thinking about a particular New Year's cultural tradition that Wabanaki people have in our tribal communities. And it's a tradition in which Wabanaki Reach has participated in reviving. It's the New Year's forgiveness ceremony. And while thinking about the New Year's tradition, we acknowledge that there exist many customs embedded in our culture that are based in core cultural values that are relational, how we nurture our relationships and take care of one another. For us, an important element to the conversation is recognizing that these core cultural values still exist today, and we want to hold up these values and remember this goodness that is inherent in our tribes and in our people. We thought this was a good way to start the new year, so we invited in the expert, well-respected elder in Wabanaki, Dr. Imelda Pearley, who's Maliseet, and she's at the University of New Brunswick. But before we welcome our guest, Maria, we'll start with acknowledging the land.
Thank you, Esther. Let us just take a moment as we begin to acknowledge the land beneath our feet. Wabanaki, the land of the first light, the dawn land. Land that has known Wabanaki ancestors, the tallest trees and the oldest rivers. Land that has known peace and conflict. Land that has nourished us and sustained us since time immemorial. We acknowledge the indigenous peoples of this land, Wabanaki, the Passamaquoddy, Penobscot, Mi'kmaq, Maliseet, and Abenaki people. And we give thanks to your stewardship and resilience. Nadal Nabem Nawik, we are broadcasting from WERU Studio in Blue Hill, Alamosik, Wabanaki.
Lilo and Maria. Imelda, we're so happy to have you on the show today. I've been looking forward to this ever since you agreed to be here. And I know we were getting carried away before we started the show and getting into the topic. So even more excited to hear from you.
Well, Lewin, and what a beautiful land acknowledgement. It's so much more a traditional way of how our ancestors would have welcomed people to our land, as opposed to when over here we say, Kulasikulpan, Wulastagog, Askamit Beltamotid, Wulastaguig. And it just, you know, it means we welcome you to our traditional territory of the people of the river, unceded and unsurrendered according to our treaty relationships, you know. And so, but I really loved your welcome, Esther. That was beautiful. And so yes, and me too. Kulasikulpa Wulastagug, and just a little background on the term Wulastug and Wulastagug. As you both, Maria and Esther, both mentioned about being part of the Wabanawug, you know, is Maliseet is actually a Mi'kmaq word and refers to our manner of speaking. So if you ever heard Mi'kmaq and Wulastaguay together or Maliseet, then you would know the difference between the languages. And one elder actually said, you can tell the Mi'kmaq when they speak, they live near the ocean because their language is, you know, is faster. But the Maliseet are by the river and their language kind of meanders. And so Maliseet in Mi'kmaq literally means the slower speakers. And so, and Wolastoq comes from the original, you know, our river, which has been renamed St. John. And so for years it's been called, well, it's still called St. John River, but our people had called it Wolastoq, you know, the beautiful and bountiful, beautiful river. So as we teach our children to maintain their identity, it's important that they know the first name of Wolastoq and why we now call ourselves people of the river Wolastoqiyik, you know. And so when people say Maliseet, I say, that's okay. That's how we were known historically, but we now have to acknowledge that we're people of the river, the Wolastoq. And we're actually over in here in New Brunswick, we're trying to get the original name back, you know, by lobbying and having circles where we're trying to get the citizens, both the Acadians and the English citizens to consider naming it, giving it its original name. So, and the other thing that has to do with identity is I'm here at the school at Chief Harold Sapir Memorial Elementary School from St. Mary's First Nation, and I'm the elder in residence here. I was previously elder in residence at the University of New Brunswick, and I still, I'm not an elder in residence there because I retired in 2018, but I still teach courses there. So in my retirement, I decided to become elder. The community asking me if I would consider being elder in residence at the elementary school here in the community so that I can infuse our cultural knowledge into the whole school and not just have a language class or a language classroom. And so I started in August, and it's been an amazing journey to be able to have this entire school willing with the teachers learning language, putting language and cultural, you know, worldviews into every subject area. Today actually is Wolastoq Wednesdays, you know, and so we had, you know, some of the children come in their vests or their skirts or their moccasins or their shawls or their anything that has anything indigenous on it or something with their language on it. And so even though we'd like to have that every day, but we really make a big thing of it on our Wednesdays, I'm making it Wolastoq Wednesdays. So, and so I, instead of them calling me Miss Melda or Mrs. Pearly, I said, call me a Blossom Wiz, because a Blossom Wiz is the first name that I was given, but I wasn't allowed to use in the day school in Tobik First Nation because the nuns of the day couldn't pronounce it, didn't like our names. And so all our traditional names were taken from us. And so I almost forgot about my traditional name until I did ceremony in 1994. Through a shaken tent ceremony. And I have to admit, it was my first shaken tent ceremony, my first fast that I did. And I was still skeptic about this supposed elder that could actually speak to spirits on the other side. And I'm just like scratching my head and going, gee, I don't know. So I don't think I want a name from this elder. And so I remember the late Gwen Bear saying, everybody is going to be gifting this elder, so you should come and gift too. So I gifted. And as I'm standing in line, and I don't see the elder because there's a curtain between us, right, because of his in his tent. Well, I'm a believer now of this elder knowledge, because that elder said, you don't trust. You don't believe. I says, no, it's my first fast, but you don't have to give me a name. I just wanted to come and gift you a gift for doing ceremony. And just as I got done saying that, my grandmother's voice came through him. And she said, Giskisiwila blossom was doos, gekim snit, nenish kisijit ngegachwil loki in, chumajiwodekech, which means I've already given you a name. Your name is Ablossomwiz. Learn what that means and why I gave it to you, and you'll be guided for the rest of your life from that name. And so Ablossomwiz, of course, is one of the 13 moons. And so I now teach 13 moon ceremonies, 13 moon teachings, 13 moon healing drums, you know, because I'm named after one of those moons. So it's kind of fitting, Esther and Maria, that I'm here today as a blossom was, because this is the moon of the whirling wind.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And I loved that when we were thinking about guests and topics and all of that, I had come across that word in a picture. And when you wrote back to us and included a blossom was in your name, I thought that's so serendipitous.
No,
that
it
I
is.
Was just yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I love that story.
Yeah. So some of the work that I do, I'm so grateful for my language. I'm so grateful for the grandmothers that taught me, and only because, you know, after realizing how much our language, there's such a gap when our language is missing, because we have lost relationship to our earth, air, land, and all of that, because when we use English over our own language, we end up objectifying. And so when we objectify, then we treat, you know, our relatives, like, you know, Musum Sui Gizus, you know, Okmi Nebaused, you know, and Chigigwasun, our earth mother, and father sky, and, you know, grandmother moon, and grandfather sun. But in English, they don't have that relationship. It's the sun, it's the moon. And so when we don't have that grounding in that relationship of our language, then we're kind of disconnected, you know, from how important it is that we're, when we say we're stewards of our environment, then we really have to feel it and know it through our language. And so so some of the work that I do, I'm very lucky. I get to sync to babies and do naming ceremonies for babies. It's my one way of preserving the language by gifting newborn babies a ceremony called placental burial, and we get the whole community involved, and then we do we bury the placenta, and then we do a sacred fire to name the baby, you know, and then that baby carries the name, you know, and stuff. So so to date, I'd have to say I've named I would say over 150 babies in the name, and I've kept record, you know, and eventually I want to write a book about how those names came to me for, you know, for the babies. I mean, there are just so many miraculous things that have happened and stuff, you know. So so right now I am working on a book, another book, and it's called it's for, in New Brunswick here, they have a program called Born to Read. And so every woman that gives birth to a baby in the province gets these little packets of baby books so you can start reading to your baby. And so for years, they've asked me to translate for them. But I always said, I'd rather tell my own story than tell an English story that's written in my language, because I'm not really expressing my culture. I'm only using my language, but it's your story. Mm-hmm. I'd rather do my own story. So I'm doing my own story, and I'm talking about that ceremony that I do to name a baby while they're still in the womb, so that when they come into the world, I can greet them in their spirit name, you know? And so that's the book that I'm working on right now, from in our language, and then it'll be in Mi'kmaq and French and English as well when we're done. And so that's one of my favorite things to do, is to do naming ceremonies. I also do adolescents, you know, and I've done grandmothers as well. But also I work with all our communities as a cultural coordinator for traditional ways of healing. So as a lodge keeper, as a pipe carrier, some of these ceremonies are needed in times when our people are going through difficult issues. So I try to work with clinicians and show them that we too have ways of healing. It's not just, you know, here's your prescription, go get better. You know, we have many, many ceremonies that we do. You mentioned one at the beginning, the forgiveness ceremony. I've been doing forgiveness ceremonies because the late Posey Nicholas and the late Elder Charles Solomon were my elders, and they talked about that forgiveness ceremony that they used to do at solstice and before the new year. So I've been hosting that. I call them wolf ceremonies. And the wolf ceremony is that idea of one wolf is on your right side saying, go ahead and do this. Nobody cares. And the other wolf on the other left shoulder will say, got you. Don't do that. It's not, it's going to hurt somebody. And so it's feeding the wolf. Which wolf are you feeding? And so we actually do that forgiveness ceremony. And we use the one Cozy and Elder Charles said was, and Heltumin Giziwableyulan. You know, forgive me if I've done actions that have hurt you this past year. Or if I had words that upset you, forgive me for those words. So that this new year, you know, so that in this new year, we can show the gift of forgiveness to our children and Creator, and how beautiful it is to start our new year in this way. So so I still do those ceremonies in our communities. And
it's so nice to hear that, because I, when I was growing up, I remember the forgiveness ceremony. It was a lot of visiting at the beginning of the new year.
Yeah.
People would spend a lot of time. We'd have to have goodies ready and coffee, and just spend a lot of time connecting. And it's so nice to hear that.
Yeah.
I want to take a second to let everyone know that you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU FM. I am your co-host, Esther Ann, along with Maria Gerard. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are talking about a return to the teachings with our guest, Imelda Perley, a Blossom Awareness.
Imelda, you were talking about the forgiveness ceremony, and I liked how you framed that as saying that we were giving the gift of forgiveness to our children.
Yes.
I wondered if you wanted to describe a little bit more about how the forgiveness ceremony happened. And Esther was sharing her memories as well about a lot of visiting going on in the early new year.
Well, one of the ways that we do it here is we actually have a sacred fire. We make tobacco, we offer tobacco to everybody, and we have them hold their tobacco. And sometimes I ask them to write on a piece of paper so they don't have to say publicly, I need to forgive this person for what they did to me many years ago or yesterday. Or you don't have to say, I need to forgive myself for what I did for somebody else. So we wrap it up. So once they put the names or of the forgiveness, then what they do is we wrap it up and we put a little cedar branch on it, and then we take it to the fire one by one, and we sing a song so that we do a guided imagery of that. Okay, you've forgiven that person, you no longer have to carry that anger or hurt or whatever that emotion is, and so now you've let it go. And so let's celebrate. And that's when we do the feast, but we always gift, we actually feed the wolf. What we do is one of the women in the community will actually cook moose meat. And we have a taste of that moose meat. And then the rest of it, we take out into the edge of the woods. And we let the wolf know, you've been fed. you know, forgiveness, to teach us how to continue this forgiveness throughout this new year that you're gifting us. And so, but here's your nourishment for taking our, you know, forgiveness and teaching us about it. And so we take it to the edge, and then we sing a song, and then we go back, and then we have our feast, you know. But everybody, children, the whole community, leaders, you know, we do that an entire day. Usually when we do it here, we do it on solstice. So we start off with sunrise ceremony with a pipe. Midday, we do a sweat lodge. And then we do the wolf ceremony right at the dusk. And then we do a moon ceremony at night. So that entire day is all ceremonial. So by the time the day is over, we've smoked four pipes for different reasons and for different people. So the children have been really involved. And so right here in our school, we had them write on birch bark forgiveness, you know, and teaching them. So in my classroom here, I have like what I call a storytelling blanket. So when two children in the school argue with each other in the playground or something, so, and they, of course, they make it always sound more serious than it is, like, he pushed me first. No, he pushed me first. And I said, well, time for a forgiveness ceremony. Come on. So then I make them take off their shoes. I smudge them, and they have to come into my storytelling blanket just as if they were coming into a sweat lodge. And then I encourage a moment of silence before they start pointing fingers at each other. And then I'll say, okay, one at a time, we're going to listen to your side of the story. And then I never expect them to forgive on the spot. I just want to teach them the act of forgiveness so that later on when I invite them back, I'm hoping that, have you forgiven each other yet? You know, can you get along? Can you do this? And so it's kind of this is one of the things they're earning their way to get their spirit names by the end of school year is, I call it, your wampum belt. So they're all earning their wampum belt. So each nice thing they do, or if they forgive each other, or if they're kind to each other without being told, then they earn a little bead and they put it on their little wampum belt. And then when they earn seven, then they deserve a name, you know, and stuff. So forgiveness is the biggest part of it, so that they can be good models of friendship and peace, you know, what our treaties are supposed to, you know, represent. And so they're learning about peace and friendship in the school in that way.
That's brilliant and beautiful. I really like that. The children must, they must really light up, huh?
They do. And I'm here in the mornings at 7:30, and I greet them at the bus, and I thank them for coming to work with us, you know, and I'll say, oh, you just make me so happy for coming to work with us, because this school wouldn't be a school without you guys. So, you know, I really try to encourage that. And then I go over the speaker during the day, and I'll give a phrase a day, you know, let's take care of each other. Let's keep our masks on. Let's wash our hands. And, you know, and or it's always something in the language. And so I have teachers that actually put the phrase of the day, you know, throughout the week and stuff. So yeah, it's nice. But to hear them call me a Blossom Wiz, that's my gift, you know, because they understand. So when you hear little babies that are just learning how to talk and they see me, they'll go, a Blossom Wiz, you know, and stuff. So yes, so I feel like it's as if they're seeing their ancestors, you know, to come be with them. And that's what I tell them, I'm everybody's grandmother. You know, so yeah, it's definitely it's not even a job, you know what I mean? So it's getting the children to be excited about it. So we've got work to do, you know, because of COVID. And one of the things is I don't know if you guys ever heard the story of the little wolf sister, and it's a story about how wolf is so arrogant and doesn't, you know, but and calls all his friends names, and he's kind of a bully, and And so Little Mouse's sister offers, what's wrong, Little Mouse? I mean, the Great Wolf. And it says, well, Creator took my vision because I abused it by making fun of my family and friends. And now I can't see anybody, so I can't make fun of people. So then Little Mouse's sister, of course, says, here, you can take my eyes. And of course, Wolf, yeah, your eyes. I'm a big wolf and I can't use your little eyes. And of course, the teaching is, well, you can have, even if you can see a little bit, it's better than not seeing at all. So a wolf accepts them. And so they go to Sacred Mountain. And so they meet different animals along the way that try to sway them from getting to Sacred Mountain because nobody believes in Sacred Mountain anymore. And of course, so I'm doing that play for the kids for our winter, for our midwinter break is the, so the little mouse ends up becoming an eagle because of her generosity and her vision of being a good friend, you know, and those kind of things. So it's a lesson in morality and friendship and trust and not being a bully. And, you know, so it's a play I love doing in the language. Yeah.
That's amazing so much. I love that. You said that one of your books or another book that you were doing was the one for the baby packet. What was your other book about?
Stone Medicine People. And because I had the opportunity in 1996 to go to New Zealand and spent a month with the Maoris, along with 30 other teachers across Canada. And we spent the month at learning about language nest and how to revive language without making it seem so daunting, you know, that, you know, because you always saying you'll never save it. You'll never save it. Yeah, it's a waste. Nobody's going to want to learn it. But we spent an entire month there. So while I was there, I was gifted, they did a potlatch ceremony in my honor and gifted me with a bundle. And so when I brought it back to our North America, back here, I asked this elder by the name of Tlacayel. I don't know if you guys ever met him from Mexico. And he used to go around and used to travel around with the Dalai Lama. I went to him and I said, I was gifted this bundle in New Zealand by the Haida Gwaii, but I really don't know what it means. And he goes, oh, let me hold it. And he held and he goes, ah, you have to be a lodge keeper. And I said, I've been in lodges, but I've never conducted one. He says, well, tonight you will for this peace and dignity camp. And so I swear, I don't remember. There were about 20 some women in that lodge and they all told me, I told them things that they needed to hear, but I have no memory of it. So I have this understanding of how ancestors trust us to be the vessels. So like I didn't do the lodge, I was just the vessel, but it's the ancestors who did the lodge because everybody was given so much gratitude. So that night I had a dream about this statue and it's an indigenous woman dressed in regalia. And in my dream, I'm just seeing, oh, you're so beautiful. I wish our women dressed like this now. And when I touched her, she came to life and she told me the story of how a long time ago our people stopped believing in their own culture and started abusing their gifts by not being good stewards, you know. And one of the things that happened was their children, they forgot to teach their children how to respect elders. So their children started throwing rocks at salmon that were swimming by, using blueberries as pea shooters, and you know, using apples and wasting them. And so when the parents said, you shouldn't be doing that, they just laughed at the parents and the parents never corrected them. So the elders came, and then when the elders came, they didn't listen to the elders. And when the elders said, we've lost our youth. They don't listen to us anymore. And so let's just move away. And so they moved away and left the children behind. The parents left. And so the children at first were, yay, we have no one to tell us what to do. But the salmon went away. The blueberries went away. So all of creation just kind of went away as well. So what the clan mothers did is they went and to all the kind people and all the ones that had good spirits, they said, we're going to have to turn you into stones for now because the world's coming to an end. But don't worry, because in the next life. Somebody will pick you up as a healing stone. Somebody will put you in a sweat lodge. Somebody will carve you into a pipe in the next world. And so the stone people will, you'll come, your spirits will come back to life. So I wrote a story about the stone medicine people.
That's very interesting. And I'm always particular to stories about rocks and stones because of Banuapska. We, they love rocks.
I know. And we always say the ones who are the ones that, I got to bend over and pick this one up, or this one or that one. And what we're told, you're a descendant of the stone people. So you are the kind one. Yeah. The healer. Yeah. Because we use stones for everything. And so that happened on my very first sweat lodge that I ever conducted. And that was 1994. So I've been doing lodges since, you know. So me too. I'm a stone collector. And I use stones in many ways in healing, you know, and stuff, just to make somebody feel good. So yes, absolutely. So, yep.
That's great. Let me just pause to say that we are Dawn Land Signals on WERU. I'm your co-host, Maria Gerard, along with Esther Ann. And Dawn Land Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. And today we are so honored to be speaking with Blumpsuez, Imelda Perley, and talking about returning to the teachings. Blumpsuez. I wanted to say that correctly. Blumpsuez.
Yeah. Will you? And yeah, and you know, when you think about how important our names are, that it's so, just the youth here earning their names is such a big excitement for them. You know, I can't wait for my name, you know, and stuff. So, and them willing to, you know, to be good stewards. So one of the things they have to do is, you know, I'm sure you know that I'm a cancer survivor. And when they did the Terry Fox run here in a month or so ago, and I said, you know, Terry Fox would like that toonie, but I bet you he'd like it better if we were to keep our playground really clean. And so I started, without telling him, I just started picking up, what do you do? You know, well, I'm telling Mother Earth, I'm sorry that she has garbage on her. And so, and I want to help Terry so that nobody else gets cancer, because we're not nice to our earth. We're not nice to our water. And we're not nice to the air. And of course, they'll go, what do you mean you're not nice to the air? I says, oh, when we call each other names, when we gossip, when we tell lies, that's really hurting the air, because the air knows the truth. And so we have to make sure that every breath we take, we give it back in truth. You know, so all these little kids will help me pick up the garbage and so on and so forth. So it's just getting them to be really good stewards and not having to be told to go do it, you know, but when they do it on their own. So they'll say, guess what I did today? I picked up garbage when I went down to the store. Guess what I did today? So I'm trying to, you know, reward their stewardship, you know, and stuff. So it's
Imelda, how do you, what about adults that, because in some of, you know, a lot of the, some of the work that we do, we work with people in prisons, Native people in prisons, and in my experience, they really want more of this education, because a lot of them missed out on this.
Yeah.
These things, and then there's a lot of people who just missed out on it for, you know, because it wasn't available. That, you know, not many adults have a name, and so what would you
They could do the same thing. And you know, a matter of fact, in Holton, every recognition day, I used to do naming ceremonies for both adults and children that asked for it. And so I remember this one woman, she had asked for a spirit name for adults, I ask them to do a fast, at least a 1 day fast. And for some people who can't fast, I'll say, well, do 1 week and just go to your neighbors. And if you're a good baker, bake something for them and saying, I'm volunteering to do something extra for somebody else besides myself, you know, and I'm doing this for my fast. So I've had women do cooking for other people in the neighborhood. And I says, and you tell them why you're doing it. Tell them you're fasting. You're going to be sacrificing food and water, you know. Or if you can't, then you have to earn, you know, do something extra to be able to say, I've earned my spirit name. Because every year you have to ask, have I been a good citizen? Do I deserve to keep my spirit name another year? You know, till I feasted again, because we feast our spirit names annually. And so, you have to get it as a baby, otherwise you're too late. Never, never. I've given some at death when people are passing over that says, you know, I never got a spirit name. And I'll go to the hospital and do a ceremony for them, you know. And stuff. So, and that's the other thing that's important in our work is, as I said, how lucky I am, I get to greet birth, but I'm also there to do a letting go ceremony for the ones that are just crossing over in the language, you know, and doing something for them. So I do a lot of those, the funeral home here in the city of Fredericton, one of them, because our community uses it a lot. They actually have a special room for my ceremonies for my people because I do the cedar bath for my people that they're asked. And I do the ceremony and I dress and I prepare and get them ready to be brought back to the community for their last ceremony.
That's beautiful.
Such important work.
It is.
It really is. Yeah. You know, when I think of the word sovereignty, I think if we can, the way we come into the world and the way we leave the world, if those could be within our worldview, to me, we would be sovereign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a word.
So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there was, because I teach at the university still, and I do a lot of workshops publicly, you know, for mental wellness, for businesses, etc. There was a word that somebody asked me, how would you say, let's come together and give each other courage? And I says, well, one word is ginab, you know, you're brave, you have courage, you're a warrior. I said, but one of the things we always feel that, we think that that word is enough by itself, but if we use the word ginabwi gabul dina, you know, mawi ginabwi gabul dina, together, let's stand together, you know, and hold each other up with our courage, you know, so because I feel everybody has courage. Sometimes I just don't recognize it. You know, and so the work that I do in mental wellness for all my communities here in New Brunswick, I have a logo and it's a medicine wheel or what we call Wilibamausawagan. And there's a butterfly coming through the center. And the reason the butterfly comes through is when somebody is depressed, they don't see themselves as a butterfly. They see themselves sometimes as still being in the egg stage or the larva stage or the cocoon stage. And so they don't see their beauty. But we that love them, we still see their beauty, but they don't. So I always say there's four stages to that emerging from that dark place you're in. But you're never going to have, you don't have to stay in that dark place. And so that's why I use the analogy of a butterfly that your loved ones see you as a butterfly. You may not see yourself as one, but don't worry, you still are beautiful, you know, and stuff. Mm. So yeah, whether you're hurting or not, you're still beautiful. Yeah.
You know, my daughters they're in their mid-20s, and they were able to participate in a coming-of-age ceremony with their friends over a couple of years, and Mi'kmahan really helped us and showed us and led us through this process, and it, you know, it was beautiful, and it had such an impact on them.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I actually started with grandmothers and their daughters. I did grandmothers first, and I've been doing these puberty ceremonies for a long time. And matter of fact, I've just, since my year of being cancer-free, I'm reviving them. And so I do the ceremonies for the women, and I'm using muskrat. I'm burying muskrat to ask for forgiveness that we've forgotten how, you know, how strong Muskrat was to our ancestors. And so I was gifted with Muskrat just before COVID hit last year. And normally I just use the fur to make rattles, what we call grandmother rattles. And but this time I said, no, I want the whole muskrat, and I'll just put him in the freezer, and I'll learn how to cook them so I can give them back to the elders who might be nostalgic about what they taste like. But COVID hit, and then in my thinking, I'm going, you know what? A long time ago when diseases hit us back in 1918, when the last pandemic hit, our ancestors were using Gilhuswusk. And so how come we don't trust Gilhuswusk? I do, because right through my entire year of chemo and radiation, I always had Gilhus in my mouth, and I would tell the doctors, actually on my medical record, that's my only medicine I take is Gilhuswusk. And so so I wanted to bury and thank the spirit of Gilhus for me being cancer free, but I also thought about other people with addictions and loneliness and, you know, depression and all of those things, you know. So I decided to put women through a one-day fast. So what it means is I give them workshops on what does commitment mean, what does forgiveness mean. So I go through this whole, you know, take them under my wing like Meek Mohan does. And then we do a one-week preparation where they have to do ceremony for 4 times a day for an entire week, and they have to abstain from, you know, those, just those protocols. Then they fast for 1 day, and then they either get a spirit name or they've earned a right to do something. And so we're still doing that. So I have, so St. Mary's, 10 women, because that was my limit because of COVID, fasted. Or Mukdo, I had 8 women that fasted. Tobik, I still have women. We were going to fast actually in December, but we went into orange phase. So I'm still waiting, but I'll still come and do it in Houlton as well. And I really feel that we have to, us women have to do these ceremonies again so that we can trust the next, you know, trust our grandmother's ways of healing so that we can pass those on for the ones, you know, that are wondering how to heal. So that way we balance out what we get at the drugstore, because I say our drugstores were the woods. Our grocery store was the woods. We didn't have buildings, you know, and stuff, you know. So, but because we're put on reservations, the government has forgotten that they're the ones limiting us and keeping us away from the economy, because when they put us on reservations, they forgot to tell the salmon and the moose and all of our food security that, oh, wait a minute, you can't cross over there because that's where Tobik is. Oh, the salmon, you can't swim over here because, you know, so all of our businesses are now crown land. And so they wonder, why are we complaining? Why are we wanting land claims? It's because they're the ones that upset our security, you know, our cultural safety. And all of that. Some of my work that I do, I've been really lucky. I have a what I call a sharing circle. So after Chantel Moore's death and Rodney Levi, I hosted a healing walk. And the reason I want to do the healing walk, I said, I'm not protesting, and I don't want us to use that word because it's their word. And I don't want us to be raising our voices like they do when they're mad. That's not the way we ask for things. That's not how we heal. And so what we need to do is walk in silence, wear your moccasins, wear your shawls, wear your skirts, wear your ribbon shirts, you know, and then we'll walk together in silence, because we've been using all these words in their words and their language, but they still don't hear us. So let's just pray to our ancestors. Let's walk humbly, you know, and pray together, and we can heal this way if we use our ways as opposed to copying how they do it, you know. So I have an amazing group that's just growing by the day, where people say, I want to be part of that circle. What can we do as a business person to be on board to attacking systemic racism in the province? So, for example, I was really proud this year at Christmas, the Lieutenant Governor, we did a treaty tree, because, you know, she'll say, "What, any ideas how I can be a better treaty relative?" And I said, "Yes, you've got the big house in the province. Let's do a treaty tree. Let's remind your citizens that you, the Lieutenant Governor of our province, is willing to do a treaty tree." And so she asked, "What? How do we do it?" So we did the purple and the white, like the Touro Wampum Belt. We did, my wampum belt is still over there, and we had a Christmas card made of her and I holding a wampum belt together, and she wore the purple, I wore the white, you know, and just to show that partnership. And she actually did 12 Days of Christmas using our language. And so she did on her Facebook page, the Wolastoqe language, or Maliseet, you know, in French and English. And she presented to the Governor General in our language. So if that isn't a call to action that's being addressed by somebody like her, and a matter of fact, she's saying next year we'll have another one. And so my students here at school wrote words in the language on birch bark, and then we gifted them to her so that she can say part of our treaty is our language, you know, and please help us protect our language, because, you know, bilingualism is official here in New Brunswick. But I said that's so unfair, because there's another language that was here before, you know, French and English. So let's not forget that. So I'm working towards, I'm naming some of the trails here in New Brunswick in our language, and making sure that our language is seen and it's heard, it's celebrated, it's protected, it's honored, and it's shared.
That is so beautiful. I mean, just the impact of a shift in, you know, in how you approach it and how you do it. And, you know, just that shift of attitude of gratitude, I guess.
Yes.
You are listening to Dawnland Signal on WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Esther Ann, along with Maria Gerard. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are talking about a return to the teachings with Dr. Imelda Perley, a Blossom Away. And I always, when this time comes, when we're almost done, I feel like it's never enough time to visit. I have so many other things I'd like to ask, but I want to make sure that Maria gets to ask anything that she wants.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to, we have about 10 minutes left to the program, and I just wanted to take a couple minutes just to share my appreciation to you for all that you've done. You've done a lifetime of wonderful work, and just hearing about all the different ways that you touch the people, and, you know, not just the Native people, you know, everybody. And you know, I appreciate the elder wisdom, you know, hearing you talk about, you know, respecting and listening to your elders, and how important that is. And, you know, just great appreciation to you for all that you have done. I know that you have been a part of a lot of the conferences or gatherings that I have been to here in Maine and on Indian Island. We had a language gathering, and you were there. And at the University of Maine, there was a women's gathering, and you were there. And you're just always such a wealth of information. And I just wanted to take the time to just thank you for everything that you've done.
Wow. Well, Lewin. Yeah, well, Lewin. So I think it's so important that I really appreciate your show, and even calling it Dawnland Signals. I have to tell you, I have this one power on one of my, most of my PowerPoints, I always end up with this cartoon, and it's two natives. One of them is doing smoke signals and the elder is standing up with his arms crossed and saying, "Send reply all," you know, and stuff. So I use that because when I ask, when you know how we're trying to bring in new vocabulary, and so when we were, because I work on the Department of Education for the for the language curriculum here in the province. And so when one of the words, how do you say computer? So I asked my elders, and one elder said, got a little smoke signals. And I said, yeah, but if I translated smoke and signal, it wouldn't mean computer. And so anyway, so we ended up saying, I'm trying to remember now, information, you know, I forget now the word, as it is, you know, we answer, you ask for it. Akinwet as wagon. Akinwet means let somebody know something. You know what I mean? So it's a portal for knowledge. Akinwet as wagon. Yeah, and stuff. So Akinwet does. So I have a question. I'm going to go to the computer and it'll tell me something. I have something to share to somebody else, so it can tell somebody else. You know what I mean? So it's an information thing. But so, yeah, so when I saw you at Dawnland Signals, I said, how clever, you know, and stuff. So my next app is going to be called Wolas Talk, you know, and stuff. So, yeah, Wolas Talk. You know, and stuff. So way, because my first one, not too many people that don't know how to read in the language would recognize Walastagwe Ladwe Wagon. They're not going to look it up. So this time I'm going to make sure there's a little bit of English in there for people to look it up and everything. So, but yeah. So, and yeah, as I was saying about the women, it's all these women that have fasted, they're now joining me when a new baby is born in the community. We go and we drum for that family outside of their home. And just the reaction of how the children will, you know, the children will go, what are you guys doing? We're just drumming for a new baby. Or if there's a death, then we go and we go to the family that's mourning. And so we're trying to get the children used to sound those drums, not just the powwow time. Those drums are for, if they're heartbeats of our grandmothers and echoes of our great grandmothers and heartbeats for us now, then we need to sound them more often, whether we're happy or whether we're sad or whether we're proud of somebody. So when you get a drum, it's not just a pretty thing you hang on a wall, you know, or take to a powwow. You have to sound it every day, you know, So I actually, the kindergarten students just got their kits. We're going to be making 30 drums for the children. So we're teaching them the songs in advance. So by the time they get their drums, they'll be birthing them with the language. And I says, that's the only time they're going to be birthed is when you use your language, because they're for our grandmothers and great grandmothers.
Imelda, can you say a little bit more? We've talked about birth ceremonies, coming of age, death. What about, you know, women that are kind of in my stage, more, you know, menopausal?
Right, grandmother. That's called the grandmother stage. That's a sacred time to be. It really is. It's a grandmother stage. Yeah, I put through, I put some women going through that, through that same idea of puberty, but it's also for women. And so what I did for them is the women that I put through the fast when they were going through that stage of their life was I had young men be their you know, you don't have to put up your lodge, the young men will do it for you, because you've earned the right for somebody to do something for you after all your life you've done for others. So I have young men that will be of service to them in that way. They go and do their own ceremony and do their own offerings, you know, and stuff. But it's they don't have to do the heavy work. You know what I mean? To let them know that you deserve to be waited on because of your what you've done for your people and stuff. We call it blessing of the feet, right? Because you've walked on the earth a long time now as a mother, as a sister, as a daughter, as a auntie. And when you become a grandmother, then you need a special blessing of your feet, you know, and stuff. So we use bare fat and we just say, thank you for all the times you know, since the time you first started, you stood up and you walked and you were that little girl and you were that teenager and you were that, you know, woman. You know, so you went through high heels and pumps and sneakers and all this, but now here's your moccasins, because now you're a grandmother that walks softly on our earth, you know, and so it's a special time, you know, of being grandmother.
I appreciate how you talk about the different phases of our lives. You know, sometimes I think back and think like, I already don't know that person, you know, from ages ago.
Yeah.
And looking at life like in these different phases. And so I really appreciate that. And also the importance of knowing that, you know, for people to realize that they deserve the right for somebody to do something for them. I think that's oftentimes a really hard place to be because we're so used to being the nurturer.
And the women have to learn to, you know, let somebody else learn, because we don't want to be the ones with all the wisdom and we don't let anybody else learn because we think we know it all. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's to give of that, you know. So just those women, they're now learning to be lodge keepers. They're now learning to be, you know, pipe carriers. They're learning to carry the drum. They're learning to nurture others. You know, they're paying attention in the community. And I think that's the way it was when our grandmothers were doing their work.
And they're learning together.
Yes.
And nobody's left behind. I love that.
Yep. And so I always have to come up with something. So right now, those women that fasted, we're going to be doing spirit bowls so they can learn how to use their spirit bowls for different ceremonies, but they have to paint them. So I'm going to get an artist to talk about different designs, et cetera, and all of that. And have them do their wooden spirit bowls. And the reason the wood is important is we have to stand and be rooted just like the trees around us, you know, the maple trees, all of those medicinal trees that stand behind us. Sometimes when we fall once, we forget wait a minute, I'm part of these trees, these standing ones. And I've got roots. I've got to replant my roots and stand stronger against the next obstacle that comes my way, you know? And so that's why I use wooden bowls a lot. And so I usually, when I do traditional weddings, for example, and they say, what's your fee? I said, a wooden bowl, a basket, a rattle, a drum, a skirt, a vest. You know, when I had long hair, a barrette, you know, but I want something that represents the culture that you're proud of, you know, and so that I could use it for others, you know, so. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to believe, but our time has come. Liwani Blossom West, thank you so much for being here and for the wealth of information that you've shared with us, and thank you to the listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals. I'd like to say thank you to volunteer technician Jeffrey Hotchkiss for his assistance and support as well. Next month, be sure to join us February 18th and every third Thursday of the month for Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Stay tuned here on WERU-FM for the upcoming program, Radioactive, with Meredith DeFrancesco.
She will leave.
All right. Kulankea Zinia. Yeah, Kulankea Zinia. Thank you, Jeff.